Shine.fm presents Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Here's Seth Tower Hurd.
Okay, episode number one. We're just going to go for it. Racism is a topic that we just can't avoid in 2017 America, even though it's very uncomfortable a lot of times. And rather than just have the same tired conversations that you see on 24-hour cable coverage and on media outlets across the web, I really want to ask the question, not how do we get more upset and more entrenched, but what can we actually do? You know, because it's one thing to take a look at the NFL protest and we could analyze that thing to death, but it doesn't make any of us actually do anything that's going to help our neighbor or make our churches and our schools and our communities better. So in order to answer that question, I brought on a couple of pretty amazing voices. One of them is John M. Perkins, civil rights legend, wrote one of the most influential Christian books ever. And oh yeah, the guy's got a Switchfoot song about him. And the second one is my friend Sam Cannoli. Now, Sam's dad is actually, if you can say this, one of the inventors of the praise and worship genre back in like the 90s. And Sam had spent most of his career in traditional African-American settings and then felt God call him into another setting to help build diversity. He's currently a worship leader at Parkview Christian Church and has some really, really good things to say about how we can show love to people who may not look like us. Okay, we got to start this whole thing off with the Switchfoot song. I mean, John is literally a living Switchfoot song. So let's start right there.
Technically, you are a living Switchfoot song. I mean, you have a song about you, so you would be a living Switchfoot song, right?
Yeah, I like that love is a final fight. And I love that. It was the beginning of my fight in reality, because I discovered that God loved me and he wanted to be my savior and forgive me of my sins so I could start over, because I was longing. I was really discovering that I needed some help.
Okay. Yeah.
So I discovered I was loved by God.
I got a lot of questions and we don't have unlimited time, but with the 10-second version, how did you and John Foreman, or you and the band Switchfoot, meet that they wound up writing that song?
Well, he read my book a long time. It's a classic. So he read it 30-some years ago.
Okay.
And he read it, and he realized that it was powerful, but he just read it. And what he said was that, boy, this is powerful. John Perkins been singing the blues for a long time, but nobody heard him. And so I'm going to make a sound. And so they called the music John Perkins Blues. And I'm going to make it sound loud enough that other people could hear it. And so I'm thankful for that.
It's, you know, kind of a cool little perk to all the work you've done, right?
Okay, so that's a lot of fun, right? But my conversation turned very serious with John M. Perkins when we got into the topic of him being arrested, trying to get some kids out of jail during the civil rights struggle, and receiving just a terrible beating that could probably be called torture. And it was at the hands of white police officers who were Sunday school teachers in his own town. I mean, he knew them. And if we're going to talk about forgiveness and loving each other, there's nothing like hearing it from somebody who has had to forgive so much to make that a very real topic of how Christ can help us love people that have really, really hurt us.
I suspect these were Sunday school teachers who were torturing us. I know the policemen in my hometown, they were Sunday school teachers, and they was torturing people. You know, I don't think we are looking at the horror of this. These football players now, it's a different world. They own some of these teams. They got investments in it. They don't behave like we behave. They don't behave different. We got to do something now. We got to come together. We got to find love as a solution to our problem. We got to find grace in the eyes of the Lord. We got to find grace in the eyes of the Lord.
Okay, so I took that piece of the conversation and asked Sam, like, where do we go with this? What has your experience been like in the justice system? And what do you want people to know that maybe is uncomfortable, but is something that you've always had to think about in this whole conversation? And I want to go ahead and get into that part of what Sam had to say right now. Check it out.
The church where I went, I was exposed to different ethnicities and cultural groups and stuff like that. So as a kid growing up, I was not overly aware of racial tensions.
Okay, when did you find that out in the world?
I found that out in the world when I moved to San Jose. That was the first time that I was called the N-word. That was the first time where, you know, I got my license and had to suffer the police brutality and targeting. And
you know, and if let's just unpack that real quick, because yeah. I think that anybody that goes to there are two statements that people make in America that are both completely easily proven wrong. The first one is that 100% of every police officer ever is racist. And then the other one is no police officer ever has ever been racist ever.
Right.
And I see these two sides on the news and I'm like, you know, you're trying to categorize a job that has millions of people.
Yeah.
And so I try to come at it more of a middle road of, you know, how can I be a part of the conversation to bring more peace to my community? I just hosted an Ask Me Anything with the mayor of my town. And there's a, you know, I live in a kind of cool, you know, we're like in a cheap apartment in a cool neighborhood, right?
Gotcha.
And next, you know, it as in a lot of cities, like one of the worst neighborhoods is pretty close to one of the best neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, you know, why aren't there things have gotten a lot better when they've done more community policing cops on bicycles. So why don't we have more bicycle cops? And it turns out the state legislature controls, you know, kind of how money gets spent on police hiring. So the money's there, but the state has to say it's, you know, it's okay. And so I try to spend my life on stuff like that. Like I think sometimes you just have to be humble enough to say, I'm not Bono. I don't sing in U2. Not everybody cares what I think.
Right.
What can I do right here?
Yeah.
So, you know, in your experiences, you know, getting pulled over for no reason. What was going on?
Several times being pulled over for no reason whatsoever, except when I was about 17, I had a BMW. And before I got it, my dad had several conversations with me because he was like, son, are you sure you want to have this car? I'm like, yeah, I'm a teenager. Of course I want a BMW. You know?
No, I'm 17.
Had the chrome wheels. I mean, it was plushed out, man, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm excited and you know, I'm coming into my own as a singer. I'm young. I don't know anything, but I'm God is blessing me. I'm making money and I'm able to do what I love to do. And so I have this opportunity where I have, you know, I get this BMW and my dad warned me. He said, "Son, you need to be prepared for what's going to happen." Because police are going to see you, and they're only going to see a young black man driving a car that he has no business driving. They don't know what you do. They don't know who you are. They don't know where you come from. But they're going to prejudge you, and they're going to target you because they're going to think you stole the car. So you need to be prepared when you get pulled over, when you get pulled over. Make sure your hands can be seen. When the officer draws out his gun, do not make any sudden moves. When he asks you for your license or registration, move slowly. Turn off the vehicle. Roll down the windows. He gave me all these things to do because this is what is going to happen. And if you're not careful, you can get killed. And so, been pulled over. For no reason, illegal searches. I remember one time I was hanging out with a friend. We went down to Monterey, and we spent the day there, and we came back, and I put, you know, 100 and something miles on my car, and I got pulled over for no reason, taken out of my car, guns drawn, and they threw me on the front of my hood, man. And my hood was, I don't know, 200 degrees. I don't know if you've ever
Southern California.
Driven, you know, if you've ever driven a car for 100 miles, it's cooking. Threw me on the hood and performed an illegal search. When I asked them for their badge numbers, they shined their lights in my face, had their guns, and they were like, write that down. Got in their cars and drove away. Stuff like that happened to me. And I thank God that I wasn't shot, that I wasn't, that something worse didn't happen, that they didn't plant something on me. But, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I'm the furthest thing from being a threat or a criminal, but it doesn't matter because I was targeted. I was...
The rapper Lecrae, who's one of my favorite artists, came out and said the same thing this year, that, you know, he got pulled over, they ripped their own car apart, and he's like, I'm a Christian rapper. There are T-shirts and CDs in here.
Yeah.
Here's my website. Here's the venue I'm going to.
Yeah.
So what do we do with this, you know, what do we do with this sitting here in the Midwest? What does the average person do hoping that, you know, and we're talking about a situation where most cops in your town are probably pretty good. You maybe have two or three or one or zero that are going to do something abusive with their power. As the average Joe, what would you want somebody to know? I mean, can we do anything as average people?
We can. And that I think there's something that's maybe a little bit newer today than maybe existed just in the 80s and the 90s and certainly the 70s and the 60s, when people were speaking out about this stuff and standing up and protesting about injustices, especially people in situations and in positions of power, i.e. the police. Now people are so focused on their own life and what's going on with their Facebook feed and their IG selfie and how many likes and hearts and their Snapchat, you know, story. If it doesn't affect them, then they don't care. And the thing about it is it has to come to a point when someone like me gets targeted, that it matters enough to you, who's different from me, to step up and say, I'm not going to allow that to happen. That is unacceptable. And I'm going to do something. I'm going to rally up people to say, this is not how you treat a human being. This is not how you treat an American. And until that happens, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change.
You know, and my own situation, like I said, I kind of mentioned friends of the mayor, pretty involved in my community. A friend of mine just got pulled over, a black friend of mine got pulled over on a bank as a bank robbery, or on a bike as a bank robbery suspect this summer. And I mean, which, you are the dumbest bank robber
you are
ever.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't
I'm
want to do
peddle
that.
My way off with this cash.
Right.
And so I walked through with him, and he decided not to take it. He just decided, you know, he's got two young kids, and he's like, I don't have the time. I want to spend it with my kids right now, not fighting this. So I was like, well, the way we do this is I go make a fuss in the paper because I do PR and I know how to do that.
Yeah.
And then we get a meeting, and then I get some, you know, some statements in the paper and on social media, and this thing gets investigated, and he decided not to do that. What I find to be so interesting, and I realize that me judging other people's motives does not help the world get any better. But true. I just had a neighbor who a black man in his 60s that I got to be friends with. In kind of this rapidly gentrifying neighborhood I live in, there was still a halfway house. And so I, like, invited this guy over to, you know, watch the UFC fight, and he turned me down. And I'm like, oh, dang it. The weather warms up, and he's got an ankle monitor. He can't cross the sidewalk. So our whole friendship was kind of me sitting on his porch sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to get emotional, but he died last month. And
oh, man.
He had cancer. He never told me. His social worker told me, so I could go to the funeral.
Wow.
And I mean, I was like one of his only friends, man.
That's crazy.
And I looked down my street, and there's three or four Black Lives Matter stickers. There was, you know, one of those all are welcome signs in three languages. I'm like, oh well, Rob's black life didn't matter. You live two doors down. You never talk to him. What I see is so much in this era of social media is, you know, in the era of the NFL protest, you know, if you really care about patriotism, that's great. There's a lot of veterans in nursing homes that could use a visitor. If you you know, plant your flag more in the Black Lives Matter camp, that's great. I will find you a way to mentor a kid.
Yeah.
So go do it.
Yeah.
Like, quit just posting to death and go do anything. Anything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I turned into a monologue.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Let's get into another clip here. That's Sam Cannoli. He's a worship leader at Parkview Christian Church. My name's Seth Tower Heard. This is Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get back into John M. Perkins. If you're just joining us, he's a civil rights legend on his final book tour, just throwing out some wisdom at the age of 87. Amazing conversation. I asked him, how do we start to move towards healing in such a divided America? Check it out.
Kind of look at the world and see, you know, I'm, you know, taking care of my kids, I'm working a job, I'm, you know, kind of invested in my career, and I see that other people are hurting, but I go back and forth between feeling like I should do something and then feeling completely overwhelmed, so I do nothing. What's one thing literally anybody can do to help somebody less fortunate than them? How do we start to have people who are friends who don't look like us, and have people who are friends who don't make the kind of money we make, you know, higher or lower or whatever?
One of the best things, I'm going to give you one best thing, there are many ways. Invite people into your house. Give them a meal. Go visit people. Make a friend. Make a consistent friend so we can feel what they feel and know what they know. And talk together, ask each other questions. Create an environment of love and receiving each other in life. Begin to be a friend. That's the best thing to be. And your friend will become, friend wants to be your teacher. If you start humming yourself out of somebody, they like to teach you. They like to tell you all about it. You know, become a friend. I think that's where we started. The nature of the problem is we're divided. The nature of the problem is that we are isolated. And so we got to be intentional about it. That's what I like about these multicultural churches that are developing. They are planting them, and they are planting them intentional, and they are growing like a weed. I think this is probably in the last 50 years or more that we've had the intentional church growth that we're having. And it's growing among these multicultural mega churches. That's a good sign.
And so do you think that all churches can become more?
They ought to. That was the Great Commission.
Yeah.
See, Jesus sort of outlined this a little bit. He sort of told us what to do. He said, go into all the world and reach all of these multicultural groups, this ethos, all of the groups of the world, and bring them together. That's what the original church was. It was Jews proselytized from all of the ethnic groups of the world in society. That's why the deacon was organized, not to keep blacks out of the church, but to invite them in and to make sure there was justice in the church, that the food was distributed in some kind of an equitable way. You know, and now we've had deacons in Mississippi getting guards and guns to keep black folks out of the church. Oh, Lord, have mercy. We're in trouble. And they're using the Bible. That's the Bible Belt. We're in trouble. We're in trouble. And using the Bible as our textbook. We're in trouble. We're to forgive each other and love each other. Lovers of God. He that loves is born of God. He that loves not knows not God. Hate is the other side of love, and it's from the devil.
That's John M. Perkins. My name's Seth Towerher. This is Stronger Together. Getting back into the conversation with my friend Sam, who is an African-American worship leader at Parkview Christian Church, really is in a season where he feels that God is calling him to help believers in the body of Christ work through this whole diversity thing. I realized that I got Sam to share a part of his story here. But afterwards, we were like, why didn't we talk about how all of us can help our churches be more diverse? So if it's okay, this is the first episode, but I'm going to try to go ahead and throw something on social media and on YouTube a little bit later this week. You can search shine.fm and track that down, because I do think that's a really important conversation that you might like to go ahead and check out. Sam and I here talk about what it looks like to grow in diversity in your personal relationships, and we'll pick it up right there. What do you want people to know, man? I mean, you're an African-American worship leader in a church with, it's got some diversity. It's also got a lot of white people. You know,
it's like 97%. Yeah. 97%, 98%.
Yeah. So why did you make this decision? And just what do you want people to know about how we have churches where we have friends who don't look exactly like us? Like, I mean, how does that work? Because you're making it work. You're being a part of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with my father, in that he made music that transcended cultural lines. He is an African American man, and yet he spent half, maybe more than half, of his time in his concerts going and performing at all Caucasian churches or predominantly white America because of his music and how it was this new thing. And so one of the things that he taught me at a very young age was that make music that appeals to all people. Be someone that can adapt to any circumstance, no matter where you are. And you're going to find yourself where you're amongst your people. You're amongst African Americans, or you're amongst Latinos, because I'm half Puerto Rican as well, and you're going to find yourselves where you're the only black man around, and you've got to know what to say, what not to say, how to be mindful of what you do, what you don't do, and really be a chameleon, and not compromising who you are, but knowing and being aware of your surroundings and the atmosphere and the environment that you're in, and using that to your advantage to be able to communicate whatever it is that you want to communicate or do or say whatever you want to say and do. And so I learned that from him. And so when, you know, Parkview is actually one of the few churches that I applied to that was predominantly white. I actually, when I took this job, there was actually several other jobs that I had, other churches, yeah, I've been talking to that are much more multicultural, multi-ethnic neighborhoods and areas. But I felt God called me here. And so I think the thing for me is, you know, regardless if people want to admit it or not, we all have our biases. We all have our prejudices. We all have the stereotypes that are running in the back of our mind that tells us something that we can expect from this person or that kind of person or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And I think for me, it's, I want people to understand and see Sam as a man that loves God, a man that's after the heart of God, a man that loves people. And I do want you to see my color. I don't like it when people say, I don't see color. I need you to see my color, because I need you to recognize that I'm different, because I'm treated different, and people think differently about me and think differently about the black community and about Latinos in America. I need you to understand that. And I also need you to be able to say, this group of people is not all this, that we're regular people just like everybody else. And I think that's the thing I want people to know, is I want people to see that I'm a regular guy. I'm different. And that should be celebrated.
Let's close out on this, okay? Because I think a lot of people say, wherever you're at, you know, I'm Hispanic and most of my friends are Hispanic and my church is Hispanic, or I'm white and most of my friends are white and my church is white. Does it make it better or worse to be like, hey, I need to understand this better. Would you be my black friend? Because that's also weird, right? It's like, I appreciate that you want to be more diverse, but like, how do we have friend groups and communities that aren't just tokenism of like, you know, I mean, kind of like what sitcoms do, like, well, we should have a black guy, or we should have a funny Hispanic woman as a sidekick, right? Like,
right.
We don't want to do that. So how how do friendships, you know, in your experience, how, what are more organic ways of building those friendships?
Well, the organic way is by putting yourself out there. Look at what you talked about, your neighbor. What do you really have in common with that guy? He's way older than you. Obviously, he got into some trouble. I mean, you don't come across as a guy that, you know, runs the streets these days. You know, I mean, when you look at where, your history growing up on a farm and that guy, I mean, what do you have in common? The only thing that you have is you want to get to know him, and he allowed you into his world, and you were able to develop this thing, this great friendship that you had.
I think that it's easier for me. I got married 2 years ago, and I think for the first 6 months, my wife was just exhausted because she's like, who are these people? I have 1,400 people on my cell phone. I'm just I connect with people very easily. I'm very extroverted.
Right.
One time, you know, I rode Amtrak, and I texted her. I'm like, hey, you want to go sailing? I met this couple as a sailboat. And she's like, well, who are they? I'm like, well, I sat by them on the train. And she's like, what? We're just going to go out on the water? And I'm like, yeah, they seem cool.
Right.
That's just my nature. But even if that's not your nature, I think – you know, probably anybody can walk across the room and just try to, you know, maybe it's awkward sometimes. And even for me, it's awkward to try to talk to some people.
Sure.
But you have enough space when people really start getting vulnerable. That's where you get real friends.
Absolutely. And if it's a desire to get to know people that are different than you, then you got to put yourself out there. You're going to put yourself out there anyway. Friendships are risky. Relationships are risky. Marriage is risky. Having children is risky. There's risks everywhere. But the greater risk is calling yourself a believer and you being indifferent to other people, because that is anti-Christ. He was all about that. Now, everyone's different. You're an extrovert. I'm an extrovert. I can meet anyone, anywhere, talk about anything, and make friends. Like, that's just who I am. And I realize that some people aren't like that. But I think if you really care about people, and we all should care about people, then you're going to have to put yourself in, then you're eventually going to be in a situation where you get the opportunity to get out of your comfort zone. And you have to take that opportunity to step out of your comfort zone, put yourself out there. And I think most people will find that it's quite a pleasant surprise to see that there are a lot more things that we have in common than things that we disagree about.
Yeah. Once again, if you're just joining us, civil rights legend John M. Perkins on his final book tour, amazing conversation. And also worship leader Sam Canole from Parkview Christian Church, African-American worship leader who really feels like he's in a season where God is calling him to help build additional diversity in the body of Christ. So at the end of this conversation, that is not as difficult when you take away, you know, the divisive headlines and the cable TV news anchors screaming at each other and the way that, unfortunately, adults can behave on social media in 2017. I mean, we're really getting back to some very basic New Testament stuff here, right? Hospitality and taking the time to listen so that you can love your neighbor as yourself. And that's what I love about this whole thing. And I'm not trying to give the Sunday school answer of like, well, the answer is always Jesus. But really, if we want our families to get to know people who don't look like us ethnically, who maybe don't make the same kind of money as us, and that goes, you know, both up and down, not having discomfort in that way. And if we want our schools and communities to be transformed, it's so simple, but it's also maybe something that our grandparents were more equipped to deal with than we are in modern America, because to them, social media meant the media being the phone you picked up to call to invite somebody over for dinner, and social meant sitting around the table and actually like talking to each other with no screens. And I think today you gotta like decide to do that ahead of time, and that's not just gonna happen. And if a bunch of us do those small actions, we really do have not just different churches and different schools and different neighborhoods and different families, but we also all get to live in an environment where this tension, this angst around the racial issues that are going on in the United States, I'm not saying they're not going to be there across the country. But our own neighborhoods, the places where we live, really can be more Christ-like places because, you know, wherever we're at, anybody can say, hey, I'm ordering a pizza, come over, sit around the dining room table and just hang. And in that, you find the moments like Sam and John and I just had where Jesus can really step in and help open up new pathways of relationship. And those relationships, I 100% believe, just with all my soul, are really the building blocks that God can use to start to take our churches, our families, our schools, our communities into new territory where we look more diverse and happy, quite frankly, that we've met new friends than we ever had before. My name is Seth Towerherd. This is Stronger Together. Hey, if you want to share this episode with somebody who may need it, you can check out the Shine.fm Facebook page or search Shine.fm Stronger Together on YouTube.
That was Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community.